Bay. Sorry, I mean, hello.
Welcome to The Art Soul. This is the podcast where we like to take apart pieces of art and see if we can put them back together again a bit better.
Hopefully better.
Halloween edition.
It's going to be a Halloween episode, and we should just preface this by saying that we're pre-recording this one. So at the time of recording, it is Sunday the 4th of September. We don't yet know who runs the country here, but it's going to be some sort of fuckwit. It's either going to be a hateful prig or a delusional harridan, I think, is the choice.
If only we had a film to talk about.
It turns out that yes, we do. We have a very
consumerist hellscape.
Yeah, about this subject. We're covering They Live, John Carpenter's 1998 They Live.
1988.
1988, sorry.
Before we get into that, we should say who we are.
Yes, who am I? Who are I?
I believe that you're Luke Haynes, you're an author.
That rings a bell. I mean, I drink.
Yeah. I'm Bea Roberts. I'm a script writer and a script doctor.
That's definitely true. We have a little, for once, a vocal cameo, and from our special guest as well, because as always, we have Disco the Podcast Puppy, who is asleep on a rug, and we are dog-sitting for Queenie, the spare stunt puppy, I think she's stunt puppy.
Yeah.
She's
stunt puppy.
She's staring at the door and growling at something that only she can see, which is fitting because, as I say, we are covering 1988's They Live. Yep. That's the kind of radio professionalism you don't get on other shows. Thank you.
So I think this is a really unusual film in that people probably haven't seen it, but you're probably familiar with some of the iconography from it.
You've seen images from it, but don't know where they're from a lot of the time.
I would imagine, yeah.
We were saying it's kind of a poster child for this show. It's so nearly brilliant.
I had no notes for the first 40 minutes.
Yeah. Like I say, 1988 John Carpenter movie. John Carpenter is sort of one of those schlock kings who, again, very patchy career, but I always enjoy him. Did The Thing, which I'm a huge fan of, long time listener.
That's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Did the first Halloween movie, mm-hmm. Invented the slasher genre. Yep. Yeah, did a lot of stuff
he's
like that.
He's a horror visionary.
Yeah, he really is. People keep thinking he's dead. It was on Twitter. He had a Mark Twain
it's
thing.
It's kind of fitting.
Yeah. But somebody said, like, oh, it's a shame John Carpenter's dead. And he tweeted at them, like, I'm not dead. Greatly exaggerated. This is 1988, as I keep saying. And I wanted to preface this actually a little bit with Ricardo Montalban, who was a character actor. He was the title role in Star Trek Wrath of Khan. He was the bad guy in the first Naked Gun film. You probably know him if you saw him. But he had a thing that he used to talk about, the five stages of fame in Hollywood, which are, who is Ricardo Montalban? Get me Ricardo Montalban. Get me a Ricardo Montalban type. Get me a young Ricardo Montalban. And who is Ricardo Montalban?
Yeah.
Come full circle. Rowdy Roddy Piper, the wrestler, stars in They Live, playing, we're at the stage of a Kurt Russell type in that.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. John Carpenter very often worked with Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell must have been busy this summer.
I wish Kurt Russell was in there.
It's one of the fixes, yeah, we'll get to it. But Rowdy Roddy Piper, the WWF and later WWE, I guess, wrestler, stars. He's not even really named at any point. His character is officially named Nada, as in the Spanish for nothing. So it's just, it's Rowdy Roddy Piper. That guy.
What are you going to be calling him throughout your synopsis?
Probably Roddy Piper, I guess.
All right, yeah. Fair enough.
But he's a buff guy with a mullet playing a drifter.
Yep.
Again, you can tell you really wanted Kurt Russell, but he was busy. He arrives in town on a train. He's been riding the rails by the looks of things. He arrives in a freight yard on foot next to a piece of graffiti that says, "They Live." It's a recurring graffiti motif, mm-hmm. of "They Live While We Sleep." We don't know who yet. I'll come to that later. He goes to the sort of the local welfare office and says, I'm looking for work. They say, look, we haven't got anything. He sees a street preacher talking about unseen parasites that are feeding off of us all. He spends the night sleeping in an alley watching TV through somebody else's window where there's a woman giving a long speech about how she dreams of being famous. He blags a job on a building site the next day and befriends Keith David, whose character's name is Frank. Keith David, again, stalwart character actor, is in The Thing for John Carpenter. Does a lot of voiceover work.
He's so good. You'll totally recognise his voice,
yeah.
Particularly if you're a Rick and Morty fan.
Yeah, he's the president of America, which is basically the world, but you didn't hear that from me. Keith David's always great. And also in Future Man, which was a favourite of ours. He befriends Keith David, Frank, who takes him to a sort of itinerant labourer camp, basically. It's a sort of semi-homeless camp. Yeah, like a tent city for people who are on the breadline. Frank is cynical about the chances of the workers, but Roddy Piper's character is, I put, Reaganomically hopeful.
Right? He is, yeah.
It's the 80s, so he's like, well, we just need a chance. If we work hard, we'll make it in America.
He literally says, I believe in America, even though he's homeless.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
A TV in the labor camp is playing, I'm using the phrase labor camp, it's a camp for laborers, it's not a, you get what I mean.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Should we call it something else?
Yeah, I guess a tent city, it's probably Shantytown, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. TV in the Shantytown is playing an ad for fake nails, but the feed is interrupted and hacked by a man who's warning about the secret ruling class who are kept safe by hiding, and we can't see them, but they're hidden, but they're there.
Yeah.
And everybody's going, oh, I get weird headaches when this feed comes in, and this hacker keeps turning up on TV. And one of the things he warns of is they are dismantling the sleeping middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. One of my notes actually says the first 40 minutes or so of this are just a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nada notices people from the camp sneaking into an old church across the road in the middle of the night. Next day he goes inside and discovers that the hymn that's being sung by the congregation is actually a recording, and the church is full of boxes of weird something or other.
It's a weird lab. There's
science equipment and crates full of things.
And again, it says on the wall, they live, we sleep.
Yeah. He stashes one of the boxes for later investigation. Under cover of the recorded hymn, he sees the leaders of the Shantytown. They're discussing the attempts to hack into the TV signal. So they're behind it. And they're talking about the manufacture of lenses for some reason. Meanwhile, one of the hobos in the camp is talking about rumours of violence. People all over the country have started shooting up banks and having strange dreams. This mm-hmm. is a recurring thing that's happening in the world. Nada tells Keith David, Frank, about the weird church, but Frank says, look, just leave it alone, mind your own business, whatever it is, you don't want any of it, just try and keep your nose clean, basically.
Yeah. He's trying to get back to his wife and kids, who he's estranged from through lack of work.
He lost his job in a steel foundry in Detroit, or in some sort of factory in Detroit, and that's how he ended up there. That night, police raid the church and bulldoze the camp.
And it's horrible.
Yeah. I've actually got a note that this scene is too long, but it is still pretty harrowing. And then as Nada escapes, he's horrified to see that the riot police are beating up the blind street preacher from earlier with batons.
And everyone, yeah.
They literally bulldoze the whole place and beat and tear gas everybody.
It's really, really nasty.
Oh, that was my note. It's the next one. It's 70% of this film is just documentary.
Yeah.
They do that, and certainly in the States, and will do here soon. Nada returns the next morning to the ruined camp and investigates the box that he'd stashed of the mysterious church product. But when he opens it, he's baffled to find it's just full of sunglasses, which, seems fairly useless. He throws the box away in an alley, but he idly tries on the one pair that he's kept and is shocked to find that they reveal the truth.
This is the iconic bit.
Yeah. So it turns out when he puts the sunglasses on, the film goes from Technicolor back to black and white, but also everything that he sees is the real reality underneath the shiny facade. It's a reverse Wizard of Oz, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, everything's gone into this weird land where every billboard and advertisement just says things like consume and obey and reproduce. And, all of advertising is basically subliminal mind control for the human race. And worse, every other person is some sort of alien creature that you can only see when you take the glasses off. They look normal. When you put them back on, they've got these sort of skeletonized, rubbery faces with glowing eyes.
Yeah. And they seem to have transmitters everywhere that are saying to stay asleep.
Yes, traffic signals and TVs are broadcasting a sort of hypno ray to keep people docile. Yeah. As are TVs when they're turned off, it turns out happens.
And my favourite bit when he looks at a stack of dollars.
Oh yeah, he's at the newsagent and he sees one of these alien creatures buying a magazine from a normal human, and then when he looks at the money says, this is your god on it.
It's on the nose, but it's fucking true.
Again, still documentary as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. This is all the iconic stuff. You've probably seen the black and white images. There's one very good one of a politician at a lectern giving a stump speech under a big Obey banner, and he's very clearly a hideous alien freak.
Could be either of our prime ministers. We've got time of recording. We don't know which one.
Probably
but
Liz
that's
Truss.
Basically the same.
Yeah. Nada begins ranting at passers-by, causing an alien to call the police on her wrist. She's got some sort of wrist transmitter, and she says, I've got one that can see here. The police turn up, who are aliens as well, and try to bargain with him, but Nada attacks them and steals their weapons before going on a rampage. He escapes into a parking garage and steals a car by abducting the woman who owns it.
From this part, we're now into the fucking stupid portion of the movie.
It goes stupid from here on, which is a fucking challenge. So this is about the 35, 40 minute mark where you go, oh, this was going so well. And now, like, he goes on a rampage, he shoots up a bank, and he goes into the bank with a stolen police shotgun and says that, I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum, which is just such a cartoony line.
It's
and
so stupid. It's come from nowhere, and he does not deliver it well.
No, Roddy Piper again, not got the chops for this. He abducts the woman who owns this car. She looks like Kirstie Alley but isn't. She's like Kirstie Avenue or something. She's you know, Kirstie Cul-de-sac, I don't know. He orders the woman to drive to her house where he takes the glasses off and is overcome with exhaustion. It's like being on drugs, being able to see the real world. The woman says that her name is Holly and she works at the TV station, but she hits him over the head with a bottle when he's distracted and throws him out of a window. Next day, he sneaks back to the construction site to try and recruit Frank to his cause, but Frank thinks he's a crazed killer and wants nothing to do with him, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Nada goes back to the alley where he binned off the glasses. Frank turns up and tries to give Nada what little money he could procure for him as a good deed. And Nada says, look, put these glasses on, you'll understand it. And Frank says, no, I don't want to put those glasses on, why would I? And my note here says, and then, like Itchy and Scratchy, they fight and fight and fight and fight and fight. Fight, 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 fight. I timed it. It's about 5 minutes and 40 seconds of ongoing fight. It is I think at the time, it may still be the longest fist fight in Hollywood history.
The fucking stupidest.
All of it is, put these glasses on. No, make me. Fuck you. Put these on.
The cost-benefit analysis of this is really low. I'm literally just asking you, as a friend, to put a pair of sunglasses on. Fuck you! This is my abiding memory of this film, is how much we laughed the first time we watched this several years ago about how incredibly stupid this film is.
We still do this to each other occasionally when one of us won't do something very simple. Put these glasses on, make me! It goes on and goes on and goes on.
Why wouldn't you just try a pair of sunglasses on?
Anyway, eventually, after a very drawn out fight scene, Frank puts the glasses on and can see.
Hey!
They now have a pair each, but they don't know what to do next, so they decide they're going to try and find the people from the church, because they seem to be building a resistance movement. Frank speculates that maybe the aliens have been with us all along, watching us kill each other for their own entertainment, which is possible. The church leader tracks them down somehow. He just turns up.
He's just there in the hotel. Yeah. They're in some weird hotel.
Yeah, they get a room because they're exhausted, and then the church leader turns up. Never really explained.
Again, we're in the shit bit of the plot. Yeah. So.
Anyway, he invites them to a resistance meeting where they're given contact lenses to replace the sunglasses. The humans and resistance now make contact lenses, making it easier. It's less of an iconic look from the movie. Roddy Piper in sunglasses looks cooler
And also we then see what they can see, which is the truth.
Yeah.
But also it's no longer in black and white. We've just abandoned that as a rule, because when there's a wormhole
sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. So they keep cutting back to perspective shots where it is black and white, but then also
it goes really inconsistent. Yeah.
Okay. The resistance leader explains that Earth is a third world to be exploited by the aliens in the same way that the West does to the actual third world, and that most humans collaborate in exchange for money and power. The aliens communicate through their expensive watches, so if you buy an expensive Rolex, that's why they're so expensive. It's a teleporter and radio. Yeah, makes total sense. And the CO2 levels keep climbing because they're trying to make our atmosphere into their atmosphere, so they're more comfortable.
It's all hanging together, Luke.
It all makes complete sense, right? The meeting discusses shutting down the hypno signal, and Holly reappears, having learned the truth, and says that her station signal is clean, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nada and Holly reconcile, but in the middle of that, the police arrive and start shooting everybody. Nada and Frank and a few others arm themselves and flee. Cornered, Frank tries to get his stolen transporter watch to work and manages to open a portal to the alien base under the city, which they escape into. Nada is now like, oh, I've got to go back for Holly. And like, no, man. And like, he abducted her briefly. She hit him with a bottle and now they're in love somehow. This is a bit of a...
Yeah, I hate this when movies try and cram in a love story that's completely... This film has no space for this.
No, it does not work. At all. They find an alien-human black tie gala where the alien overlords are explaining that profits are up, which is, of course they are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They all also run into a hobo from the work camp.
It's called Davos.
Yeah, right. It's the Illuminati. What's it? Shadow government? Shadow?
Deep state.
Deep state, thank you. Yeah, those guys. They're there.
Lizards!
They're not lizards, they're aliens.
Lizards!
Get it together! Anyway, they run into a hobo from the camp from the early scenes, who's happy to see they've been recruited. Oh, welcome aboard, guys. He's now himself in a tux. He doesn't really have a character name, so I've got Miss Tux Hobo from now on.
I mean, it doesn't make sense why they've recruited him, but it's a nice beat.
Yeah, it's great to see that he's become a turncoat, but also, yeah, why would they want that?
Why on earth would they bother recruiting him?
But we'll gloss over that. He gives them a tour of the facility and mentions that they're under a TV studio where the signal is being broadcast from to keep everyone docile.
Yeah. It's a bit like a Bond villain, very elaborately and slowly explaining.
Well, he thinks they're on his side. He's giving them the torch. They're new converts.
I know, but...
Yeah. Nada and Frank get asked for their papers and have to break cover and start shooting the guards. Tux Hobo tries to convince them that the aliens are the winning side, having already conquered most of the Earth, and they might as well just capitulate and get rich. And then he escapes with his teleporter Rolex. Nada desperately searches the rest of the TV station for Holly whilst they're trying to make their way to the roof to shut off the signal. Again, doesn't really make any sense.
It doesn't quite hang together,
yeah. They find Holly and make it to the roof where Holly shoots Frank in the back. I've got a note here, best death ever, but we'll come to that. Nada prepares to shoot the transmitter, which is hidden to the human eye, but he can see it now. But he's stopped by Holly, who also tries to convince him to give up and just switch sides, like everybody else has been telling him to do. SWAT helicopters arrive and Nada stands down. But then he pulls a concealed gun and kills Holly before shooting the transmitter and being killed by the SWAT team himself. With the last of his energy, he gives the cops the finger as the signal shuts down and humans everywhere awaken to the aliens in their midst.
With some 80s movie gratuitous nudity.
Yeah, right in the last moment.
Just a pair of boobs. Yeah. You just didn't need them, but there they are.
Yeah, there they are. And then we end on that sort of
Excellent synopsis. Thank you, Luke Haynes. So, things I like, there's loads I like about this movie. There's absolutely tons I like about this movie, to the point where I really think we, as much as I'm sick of remakes and sequels, this could really do with a remake.
So
good.
You're absolutely right. It's timely. It's really more timely.
I know. So obviously, I love it. It's an anti-capitalist horror movie.
Yeah.
The real horror was capitalism, obviously. So, you know, we're a pair of right old lefties. That is perfect. It's really interesting and it's a great premise. One thing I realised as well is that within our entertainment landscape, we have a real lack of stories that are about poverty, that are about working class characters and about economic realities that are faced by lots and lots of people.
Well, the happy ending for working class characters is they become rich, right? Not that they fucking smash the system, which is what we'd like to see.
Exactly. And like the first thing we do, what's interesting about using him as a central character is that he believes in the system. And the first thing we see him do is try to get a job and be refused because there aren't jobs.
Yeah.
So right away, the film tells us from the first moment, it's not that he isn't trying and he isn't capable.
Yeah.
He's not lazy.
Yeah.
He is like the system. There aren't jobs for him.
Have they tried cutting taxes for the rich so that the money trickles down to the homeless?
So I absolutely adore that setup, and I think we need lots more of this stuff. Like you said, becoming increasingly terrifyingly timely. There are some really wonderful moments within this story. So, like we said, when they clear the shantytown, it's horrible. It's really visceral. There are good beats that he becomes a fugitive and that no one listens to him, that he goes to the police, but the police are aliens too. There's a couple of really good twists.
It's the acronym ACAB, which is all cops are bastards, but it's ACA, it's all cops are aliens. I don't know how
we, alien bastards.
Yeah.
The twist of the hobo being like there and then taking them in and being like, oh, I've turned. The moment with Holly killing Frank is really shocking.
I love that. That's why I've got the note for best death ever on that, because it's so rare. Again, not only is it so rare that we see this sort of naked leftism on screen, it's so rare that you get a realistic death, right? And then a lot of the action in this is very unrealistic. But the idea that, you could just, that somebody could just shoot you in the back and you're done. And that's the end of the character. And it's like, and there's no heroics and there's no sort of big scene for him. He looks the wrong way and somebody gets him in the back of the head. And it's like, oh, that's actually how most people do die in violent situations, right?
Yeah. And the scene where the Tux Hobo is sort of giving him this argument of like, look, this is completely insurmountable as a problem. They control everything in every country.
We all sell out every day, which we do.
Just take the money. Why rock the boat? Look, you could have what you want. It's a really compelling argument. It's a really good bit of drama is then dropped for shooting.
Marx teaches us there is no ethical consumption under capitalism, and that's the point, right? You know, like I think Coca-Cola is an evil company, but I'll drink the fucking product if you give me one, And it's that. We all do that. So
absolutely. It's a kind of Faustian pact that lots of us, we all take to greater and lesser extents. And the ending is great as well, where he dies giving the finger to authority and with the truth then getting out. Yeah. So there's loads of really fantastic stuff in here. The problem is, I don't think I've ever seen a film drive itself off a cliff so hard. It is such a sophisticated, interesting setup that 40 minutes in just goes so dumb.
I mean, very, very few films are shot chronologically, right? But if this was shot chronologically, there were 2 weeks in the middle where everyone was just pissed or something. Like, oh, fuck it. We'll just, yeah, that'll do.
Like, half of the script got burnt and they were like, I don't know, we'll film a fist fight for a really long time.
Just busk it. We'll work it out.
Just, it is, that fight is the encapsulates what happens to this film, that we've got this like sophisticated, interesting, satirical point, and then two men literally beat each other, which would be to death if it was realistic, about the fact that one of them won't try on a pair of sunglasses. And at no point does he say, the reason that I need you to try these sunglasses on is because there's an alien race. If you put them on, you'll see them.
We'll come to that. I do have to say about that fight, it is ludicrous. I do like it in terms of pure action fight scenes. It's very well done for, like, it's far too long and it's stupid.
Sure.
But I like that it's on concrete and it's very, very realistic is the wrong word, because, like you say, they'd be dead.
Hired a wrestler as our main character, so we want to use him.
A little bit, but, like, it's very, very street level. There's no kung fu or flashy stuff. It's very sort of, they keep hitting each other in the balls where they can get a chance to. It's very, they fight dirty, and I like that. It's more realistic than a lot of movie fight scenes, although it's too long and stupid and extraneous, but as taking on its own as a fight scene, I like that they're doing these things to each other.
Incredibly ridiculously set up 5-minute fight scene, you can just watch that on YouTube.
Oh yeah, it's all over the place. But actually, the entire movie is on YouTube because it didn't succeed for it. And, you know, we paid for it.
But the plot really goes, it really disintegrates. It really stops making sense a lot of the way through. And again, you get these weird coincidences of suddenly the people from the church are there, and it does that bad film thing where you're not quite sure what's happening or what anyone's plan is. Or
why are you here now?
Why are you doing that now? Like, the character of Holly doesn't make sense at all.
No. We weren't sure, like, did Nyla lose his sunglasses when he was thrown out the window? He seems to recover one pair from the alley, but then him and Frank both have a pair. I thought it was...
He rescues his box from the back of the...
Did he? Because that wasn't clearly
truck.
Shown.
It's not very clear. This is what I mean. It just gets really, really mucky. And because it's unclear, and because there's zero character development, then I really disengaged.
Well, I thought maybe it would be so easy to have her pick up his sunglasses that he's left behind when she throws them out the window and try them on. That's a 3-second shot, but we don't get that.
But then she turns up at the Rebel Alliance meeting, but then isn't a rebel, she's an informer.
Yeah. Well, the police turn up right on her heels, so presumably she was... But then how did she know to do that, and so on and so on, It just raises more questions than it asks, and then it answers all the time.
Why does he immediately trust her?
And fall in love with her.
So... it just becomes totally messy. And like you said, there's just no character development. He starts off as a really interesting character to put through this situation. Kind of the ideal character, right? To have this someone who really believes in the system and really thinks it'll work.
Yeah, to have this Damascene revelation.
Exactly, he's the perfect person for it. But then what we don't do is have any gradual character development of like him realising that. We don't see the emotional impact of his loss of faith in what he believes in. We don't.
I mean, again, you're asking a lot of that, of Rowdy Roddy Piper, fake wrestling
Scotsman.
But imagine
if we had Kurt Russell,
a
better script that was interested in his character development. So have you got... I'm going to move on to fixes.
We've covered all the good stuff, things that we like in this. I've got a note that I think this might have been another John Carpenter soundtrack, and people say, oh, John Carpenter does a soundtrack to his films. Yeah, he shouldn't. John Carpenter can play the synthesizer a bit, and that is the soundtrack to a lot of these movies, and I think this might be
one of
those.
The Dennis Waterman of horror.
Yeah. I thought Dennis Waterman was the Dennis Waterman of horror.
That's true.
And I say that as the guy who did the music for all of this show, but we're doing it on a stool in the living room. That's the difference, right?
So, I think you could do a really interesting, not just a remake of this, but a contemporary remake of this. Although I realise what would happen is you could broadcast all of this on YouTube of like, there are aliens, if you put these sunglasses on, you can see them, whatever. And it would just be added to the din of conspiracy theories this on the YouTube problem. And the aliens would just let you say it because no one cares.
Yeah, right. You could make everyone put the sunglasses on and 20% of the people go, there's no such thing as sunglasses.
I don't have eyes.
Yeah, you're wearing them right now. No, I'm not. It's the woke liberal media trying to make you believe in these aliens that are vaporizing me as we speak, and I'm not being vaporized. I've never had any feet or shins or knees or, oh God. That's how apparently a big chunk of the population would react.
The real horror of 2022. But I think what you need to do, so I am happy for, this is kind of an action film, it's kind of a horror film, it's kind of a, you know, fairly sort of broad satire. I don't need really, really, really deep Chekhovian character development, but you do need some character development.
You need some consistency.
You need some consistency. And I think that the way that you structure the action is about what he needs to learn or his journey that he goes on.
Well, one of my notes is that we... Sorry, I'm going to have to find my fixed section here. Have the Frank character, the Keith David character, be the Reaganite, and or switch the casting round, right? Because first of all, Keith David is a better actor than Roddy Piper is by a country mile.
Yeah.
Fine. And it would be interesting to have a black protagonist, but like you either need to have a Reaganite foil to him, or like, you know, because there's a moment when he first puts the sunglasses on and realizes what's going on really in the world, and he sort of laughs and goes, oh, I figures it'd be something like this. But that comes out of nowhere, because that doesn't make sense for that character, right?
Yeah.
If he was the cynical one who's, like, again, have Keith David be the lead character, have him put the sunglasses on and go, oh, it figures it was something like this, because he already says, the working classes are fucked, there's no hope for us,
we can't
work our way out of this. And that, you don't think so?
No.
But then have Roddy Piper as his Reaganite mate on the Bill Insight, and then try and convince him. I think
it's more interesting to have a greater character arc of that conversion.
Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah, either have a longer arc and a longer conversion, or switch them around if you're gonna. Yeah. I think we're kind of saying the same thing.
Yeah. Do you want to do your fixes and I'll do mine? Or should I do mine?
My fixes, like I said, we need to cut a lot, but also a lot of it is solid. I was joking when I said that 70% of this is a documentary, but a good 70% of it actually does hold. I was surprised how much does hold. The hobo stuff and the...
There's some really, like I said, there's some wonderful moments. They just need to be scaffolded to properly. Yeah.
I would say make the opening scenes longer. Do more of a run-up at this, right? And then maybe, like, if you're going to have him be this sort of Reaganite who thinks he can just work his way out of poverty and is increasingly finding that he can't, have him, I've got a note here, like, faith as a last resort. That's why he goes into the church, not because he's seen somebody scuffing around late at night, but, like, he's completely broken down. He's like, look, maybe if I turn to, like, this is the last refuge, the opiate of the masses. If I go in the church, maybe I will feel better.
Yeah, I like that.
And then the church is empty, and he's like, which also tells us something about religion, right?
Yeah.
The church is empty, except for these boxes, and he's like, oh, this is, you know, and then, but have that sort of nearer your halfway point in the film. I want to have like a long opening of, it's risky, but I want to sort of do grinding how bad this situation is, because a lot of audiences don't get it, right? So let's really drill down on that. Gives us more time for character stuff, gives us more time to establish how bad the world is.
Yeah.
And, you know, having find the glasses later, I've got a dialogue punch up.
That needs a 5-minute long punch up in
America. I've got dialogue punch up, by which I mean make, and have better action choreography. It suffers from that 80s thing of like people striding around with a machine gun with infinite ammo, just randomly blasting people.
I mean, we're getting into a question of world, really, about what is the film, because if you're grounding the film a little, this is my personal taste of, like, I don't enjoy fight scenes enormously, so I would, like, ground it more in the kind of horror and the drama of it, in which case we don't need all this action stuff. But then if you're going for more of an action romp, then you need to get to those set pieces in a way that makes sense.
Again, the ending is solid in that, like, it should be a suicide bombing, not a long shootout scene, right? Because this whole thing of like, Kurt Vonnegut, the great humanist author, was asked not long before he died what he thought about Al-Qaeda and suicide bombers. And he said, well, I think they're very brave, you know, because like they really believe in what they're doing to the point where they're willing to kill themselves. So like, that should be what he's doing, really, is not striding down corridors with an Uzi killing people left and right.
Yeah.
You want, like you say, less shoot 'em up and more sort of surreptitious and more tension, I think. But broadly, that's all I've got to say, is that the dialogue sucks. You need to redo the dialogue. And ideally, get your Kurt Russell figure. Kurt Russell brings a lot to the table. He's a better actor, and he's quite collaborative. He came up with a lot of the ideas in the other Carpenter movies, so like, he would have been much better for this.
Yeah.
You know, so it should have been Kurt Russell, but as we can't time travel and remake the actual film, in a remake, dialogue needs to be better. Longer opening run-up to finding the sunglasses, or whatever our mechanism is these days. And that's about it. And then have it be less horror, more suicide bombing. More horror.
more suicide bombings, Luke's famous notes.
It's always my note on most things. But yeah, more tense, more suicide bombing, more horror, less action.
All right. Can I give you my take?
Yes,
on
do.
This?
By all means, do.
Okay, so I come from character first, because that is how I tend to write things.
I thought you came from Devon.
It's very characterful.
It is.
So the way that I work is like, what is the journey that we're going to take this character on? What is the transformation?
Yeah.
And then you work in the plot to fix that, to get to those points that you need to get to. So what if this Nada character is still, he's still homeless and everything, you know, right on the breadline, but he is disdainful and he is shitty about other poor people because he is a Reaganite and he is really rude, including to Keith David's character.
Yeah, it's Frank. That John Steinbeck's line that America doesn't have poor people, it has temporarily embarrassed millionaires, right?
Yeah.
We're all going to work our way out of this. Everything's going to be great for us one day. We just have to,
Because there's this really interesting beat that, so he's on the building site, and Keith David comes up to him and says, like, do you need somewhere to stay? And he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, there's somewhere that you can go and get food and there's showers. Like, I'm walking that way. I'll take you. And he doesn't reply.
Yeah.
But then he follows him. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting, because it comes off. First, you think, wow, that's rude. And then you think, oh, maybe he's really embarrassed and he's too proud to say, yes, I am homeless and I do need your help. But
again,
then
a better actor could have made something out of this.
Yes, exactly. So that would be really interesting. I mean, they then don't sort of go on that route. He's just like, oh, I don't follow a man until I know.
Yeah, Keith David's like, why are you following me? And he's like, well, I want to make sure you're on the level kind of thing. Yeah,
it's a weird sort of like, it's because I'm very macho.
Again, like, dialogue pass and a better actor would solve a lot of this.
But if he is too, like, you know, we get that, but he's actually too proud, but he's desperate. So, and he goes around the camp, and instead of sort of bonding with Frank, he is like looking for reasons why all these people fucking deserve where they are.
Yeah.
Like, this one's a wino, that one thinks he deserves it. Like, I'm not one of you.
Yeah.
Right. So this is where he starts on Luke. He has his blinkers on.
Yes, very much.
See what I've done there?
That's a very apt metaphor for this. Yeah, yeah.
But then, so his character arc is obviously having this huge Damascene
moment.
I
don't see what you've done. Let me put these sunglasses on. Oh, yeah.
Where he realises that it is a systemic problem. Everything is not what he thought.
Mm.
And that when he's sort of brought to his knees, it's these losers, you know, quotation marks, that he needs to go to for help, because these people actually have value, and he learns that collective action is the answer.
Yes.
Comrade, so
solidarity forever.
So to put this into my absolute beloved five-act structure, this is what I'm going to do. So
why don't you just fucking marry it?
It's not an option.
Stuck with me.
So you're trying to try and make a structural joke of like, it's not an option yet, but maybe if I keep waiting till that fall. Okay, so I think that the turning point of Act One is, you know, so he's homeless, he's being shitty, that he's better than everybody else. But then
he's homeless for now.
Yes, exactly. And then he discovers the glasses. Everything I believed wasn't true.
Yeah.
So Act Two, he just completely falls apart. And I think he goes to the authorities for help because he believes in them. So maybe he sees like someone from the army, or he like goes to the mayor or something.
Yeah.
And everywhere he goes in these institutions he believes in, there are fucking aliens, and he's losing his shit. And he accidentally shoots a police officer just because he's like a sort of, he doesn't go into a bank deliberately to do it. He's just sort of like in a frenzy. There's aliens everywhere. He manages to get a gun and he shoots someone. Now he's a fugitive. That is your turning point for Act Two.
Can I disagree a little bit on this?
Go on.
Well, because again, there's material there where like Nada sees the police beating the blind preacher, like presumably to death, because we never see that character again. I think do the bulldozing scene a little bit differently. It is harrowing, but it needs to be shot differently. I mean, that needs to be his turning point, I think. Not the glasses yet. I think he needs to just be horrified that the police, who are quote unquote the good guys, and we solve everything by funding the police more in America.
Yeah.
So I think maybe have that be the start of his conversion. I think maybe make it more gradual.
Okay, yeah.
I think that beat is there in the script, but again, it's not done well enough in this movie.
I think you can definitely have him sort of having this opinion, but sort of, you know, sort of begrudge begrudgingly learning. And then I think that that should be horrifying, that scene.
Or maybe, like, have the police in that same scene kill Keith David, right? The only person that's been nice to him, but he is a black guy, and so they just shoot him for no reason.
Yeah,
and then
you
realise that the police are, first of all, do that all the time and are the bad guys.
Yeah. I mean, that screws up the rest of my plotting, so just for now.
Okay.
This is just my first pass.
Okay.
So I think, what I think is helpful, however we get to it, is that he becomes a fugitive.
Yeah.
Because now he is on the run. It's just applying a lot more pressure, and it means that there are even fewer reasons for people to listen to him, because imagine that he's like, you know, talking to an alien. He's like, I'm going to tell everyone. And they're like, you're a fucking homeless fugitive. Who's going to listen to you? Just shot a cop. Like, you've got nothing of value for anyone to listen to. So it doesn't matter who you tell. I think that's a really good and interesting beat.
Yeah.
Then I had in Act 3 that he reunites with Keith, but obviously that's difficult because he's been horrible to him and kind of shitty, but he manages to win him round, and they do manage to find the church people, and like a lot of this stuff that is in there, that they find this meeting. The meeting is where we get a lot of our exposition.
Yeah, a lot of this is solid. It's
And that they say we need to destroy the Hypno Tower, the meeting's raided, they go through the wormhole. All of this is great.
Yeah.
So they're now they're now sneaking around, and I think that instead of Tux Hobo articulating that offer of this is the offer they made me, that offer should be made directly to him.
Yeah.
Leave this now, put your gun down.
Yeah.
You can have the keys to this luxury penthouse. Yeah. Like, make that our main character have a tough choice.
Yeah.
And I said potentially that he's really seduced into making that choice. You know, maybe we have that Holly character. But perhaps they shoot Keith David at that point, and he's like, no, fuck you guys, like, I can't do this. And then we go on to the final act, which is, I think, you know, where he goes and suicide bombs the tower, everybody, it's a great ending.
It is a good ending. I think that's very good. I'm not saying, it's okay. C-.
I get notes all the time, but yours are the bitchiest.
No, I would say maybe don't have them shoot Keith David's character, but maybe have some sort of I want some sort of tell in that moment that he's gonna go for it, but then he realizes. You remember there's an episode of The Walking Dead where, like, the plot of The Walking Dead became this rinse repeat thing of like, they get somewhere and it's safe, but then it turns out it's not safe because people are the real monsters, so then they have to leave and they find somewhere safe, but it turns out it's not safe.
Yeah.
It was one of those episodes around the time I stopped watching it where they arrive somewhere that looks really safe and fortified. And then they slowly notice that the people that are, like, on the watchtowers are wearing bits of clothing that their friends were wearing beforehand. So something like that, where they are making sense. Maybe we do something. And then you notice that maybe they've got something that belonged to somebody that he knew that, you know.
Oh, and also I would have Tux Hobo be, he was always on their side, and he infiltrated the camp because it was near the church, the way they thought that they were. So he's a spy. So he wasn't ever actually a hobo.
That
he was,
may have been the case, because all through the film, Tux, when he's still a hobo, he's like poo-pooing the transmission to hack
the
into
TV
the
off,
yeah
isn't
it's
he?
Like, oh, I hate this hacker transmission.
So
maybe he was.
Maybe he was,
again, it's not clear in the script because it needs to work on it.
But it's so full of really wonderful ideas,
and the imagery is still great, right? The black and white images of the world as it really is are still fucking fantastic.
There's a great film just fighting to get out, but it can't because it won't put on its fucking sunglasses.
Why don't you make me put the oh my balls.
Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween, everybody! And
right, we should do our socials.
We should do our socials and say goodbye. We just woken up guest puppy
Queenie. She's been very quiet. Well done on your first one. So if you would like to get in touch, you can do that in a number of ways.
You can tweet us at ArtsHolePod on the Twitterer.
You can send us an email at
artsholepodcast@gmail.com. See, it's hard not to put two ats in it. You used to criticize me for that one.
Alright. You can also join our Patreon, where we get bonus episodes.
Yes, and actually, if you listen to this with the sunglasses on, it just says join the Patreon. Join it. Give us your money.
That is patreon.com/thearthole.
Obey.
We have a brand new thing. So we appreciate, you know, obviously times are really, really tough, and, you know, don't worry if this is
not a
top priority for you to give some money to. However, if you thought, do you know what? I'm not going to commit to a Patreon for every month, but I would like to just slip something this way. We have this new thing, which is you can buy us a coffee. So you can basically just send us the money that it would cost to have a nice coffee.
Yeah.
And you can do that. We'll have a link in the description, and it's buy me a coffee. patreon.com/artshole podcast.
Coffee.
Buy us a coffee.
Buy coffee.
Don't bother watching They Live except for the first 40 minutes.
I mean, watch it as a... I so want to recommend this film and I can't. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening anyway.
All right, bye.